The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Weekly Connect with me, Stephen Scott. And this week, it's a special for you. We are going to be focusing on the third instalment of the RNIB series, How I See. It's a film that aims to help everyone understand sight loss better through the words of blind and partially sighted people themselves. Now, first up this week, let's listen to the video that everyone is talking about.
Hi guys, my name's Mark and I was part of the original How I See video. I've got a condition called cone rod dystrophy and I work at RNIB. Now, there's over 200 eye conditions out there, and thanks to you guys, we've managed to get a little bit more of an insight into what they're like. Watch the compilation, let us know what you think.
I'm Lorraine and I've got panuveitis, glaucoma and Charles-Binet syndrome.
Although I don't have a specific eye condition, what I do have is a connective tissue disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Panuveitis is like, makes your vision very, very cloudy, like sensitive, very, very painful. It's like being poked really hard in the eye when you try and focus on something.
I have a rare condition called septo-optic dysplasia, and part of that condition affects my eyesight. I also have nystagmus as well, which affects the way I focus on things.
I have fairly good vision. I can see things around me, but I struggle to see things at a distance, like signs and details on objects. You know, they have to be close up to me in order to read them and see the detail. And that's caused by a condition called nystagmus, which makes my eyes shake and wobble about all the time.
And Charles-Binet syndrome is your brain tries to replace the images that it thinks is missing.
I also have a condition called aniridia, which means I'm more sensitive to bright sunlight and glare and find it harder to adjust in the dark because I don't have an iris in my eye.
I have very narrow depth of field vision, and what this basically means is I can't see anything to the either side of me, above me or below me. I've only got central vision. I have no peripheral vision whatsoever.
I think it's very important to recognise that there are members of the visually impaired community that don't have a specific condition, and we don't have a, in inverted commas, a reason that our sight is bad and that we struggle seeing.
Sight loss is a very varied melting pot of different eye conditions and different people who all have different levels of eyesight.
So we'd love to cover so many more eye conditions, but we can't do it without your help. So if you'd like to share your story, just get your phone, put it into landscape, tell us a little bit about your condition and use the hashtag HowIsee.
RNIB, supporting people with sight loss.
So there you go, that is the new video, How I See, which explains how people living with sight loss actually see through their own eyes. Now, one of the most common misunderstandings, for example, is that people who have a sight condition can see nothing at all. In fact, only a very small number of people actually live with no vision. Video aims to break down the barriers between the general public and the visually impaired community. Basil Oxtoby has been talking to the woman behind the idea of the film, G. Paul from RNIB.
How I See came about 2 years ago, summer 2016. There's two main objectives of the campaign. It started from a frustration in the community that nobody understood that spectrum of sight. There's a lot of grey area. People, general public, tend to put it in, you know, either they see completely or they see nothing at all. So the main objective is that we want to reach further into our blind and partially sighted community, so particularly through RNIB Connect, which is our community of people that are affected by sight loss, whether that's personally, professionally, through friends, family, etc. So we want to really engage with that community through storytelling that is something that's important to them. So telling stories about employment, about that spectrum of sight, about explaining the cane, things that really are relevant for our community. The bigger and more ambitious objective on top of that is to engage with the general public. And I think a lot of what we're doing now and going forward into 2018 really will address that, particularly working alongside our brand activity and working within the sector and with corporate partners. So we want to shift the general public's attitude around sight loss so that people understand better that spectrum of sight.
So you said they were moving on to 2018. How would you sum up 2017?
So 2017 for How I See was a big year. We built on the activity and the insight that we learned from the 2016 campaigns, which were sort of like the test and learn kind of campaigns that we built on. 2017, I think we just went bigger and bolder and we really reached deeper into our community. We also also partnered with other kind of mainstream media and did some really cool things alongside activity with brand. So particularly some of the key highlights for How I See and for me personally and professionally as well. We worked and inspired wider brand work, particularly things like R&B being the health charity of the year for Glastonbury, so having the eye test karaoke, which simulated sight loss in a fun and engaging way for the over 200,000 people that were at the event in June. We also, How I See, also inspired things like the Channel 4 ad takeover, which was launched and broadcast inclusive of AD in September in National Eye Health Week. It was broadcast around the Undateables, and there was some really great partnerships through that, particularly with our charity, our partner Specsavers as well. One of the great things to come out of 2017 was our partnerships, so particularly working alongside sector, media and research partners to better understand the attitudes around sight loss, so particularly in the general public, that understanding and attitude around that spectrum of sight. So an example of that is our work with the Royal College of Art and the Helen Hamlin Centre, which is the How We See It project, which is specifically working around identifying key attitudes, representations of vision impairment, so that we can better understand what the general public sees sight loss to be, how the blind and partially sighted community want to be portrayed and how they talk about sight loss, and really addressing some of those key issues and reflecting that as a part of our brand and a part of How I See particularly.
And what was the highlight for How I See in 2017?
So the highlight for How I See in 2017 was particularly the October campaign, which was focused on that key statistic around 93%. So we know that 93% of those that are registered blind or partially sighted can see something. And with over 2,000 people sharing the video, particularly on social media and also some of the work we did with radio and press, etc., we knew we were doing something right. I think some of the key indicators for me of how successful it's been and how engaged we are is not just the growth within the community. So we see on average 100 to 300 people join on the back of every How I See campaign, but also, and more importantly, people are really confident to tell their story. Some examples of that were particularly Leah Kaplan, Fashionista and Well On Ever, who are accessibility bloggers and vloggers. And some of those particular video and blog creations reached over 40,000 views on their own organically. So I know from a marketing perspective that it's meeting the key kind of campaign ask, but also it really shows that people are encouraged to tell their story of how they see. I feel that the biggest benefit to our blind and partially sighted community is that badge of honour about How I See. Often in the community, people feel a sense of blind shame, if I'm honest, of feeling as though using a cane or a guide dog or being open about their disability is a bad thing. But we want the general public to understand that difference. And for us, the key part of that is that people feel confident to explain their spectrum and their experience of how they see. And we want people to feel that they're connected in doing that, that they've got encouragement from the community, and it's told in a positive way that the general public would understand. So it's not intimidating, it's not completely unnormal to them or kind of foreign to them. It's something that is everyday. So people using the bus or people using public transport or being out and about, which we want definitely blind and partially sighted people to feel. So it's a platform and a way of connecting using that badge of honour of How I See.
So 2017 was a successful year. What is the plan for How I See in 2018?
Again, we want to go bigger and bolder, even more so than in 2017. So particularly working really hard alongside our brand and working with partners, particularly with research and with our media partners, to really reach further into the general public as well as within the blind and partially sighted community. People who kind of get behind How I See can look forward to hearing about key issues that we know are important to you. So things around employment, isolation and mental health, transport, technology, etc. And we're open to hearing what other things we need to put on that agenda as well.
Obviously, that's the main plan, but what are the hopes? What do you want to see really happening as a result of the campaign this year?
Definitely want to see more people using that hashtag How I See and sharing their story. We want to develop ways locally to engage with telling that story about the individual kind of How I See stories that really help boost the campaign. And it is our campaign, it's our movement, and it's our story as a community.
And speaking of the community, how can the Connect community and the listeners at home get involved in How I See this year?
We really want people to tell their story, whether that's online or offline. I don't care how you do it. You know, you can tell your story in a poem, in a song, in an interpretive dance piece, as long as it's using that hashtag how I see means that it's all collected, gathered, and it creates momentum behind the campaign. It reaches more people. You can join R&B Connect. With that, you'll be able to be involved more in what's happening locally to you, as well as through social, through media, through radio, etc. And if you're not already signed up to Connect, you can call the RNOB helpline or visit rnob.org.uk/connect. And if you want to check out what's currently going on with the campaign, particularly in January, we've got a push where we want people to create short video clips and tell their story. If you go to rnob.org.uk/howisee.
Jay Paul, thank you very much for talking to us here at RNIB Connect Radio.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Jay Paul from RNIB there. This is a Weekly Connect special looking at the stories behind the new RNIB film, How I See. Now, it is the third How I See film produced by the charity. RNIB's Jill Barclay spoke to another one of the people who got involved with the film last year.
At the age of 31, Ryan Compton is a successful businessman. After losing his sight to glaucoma, he decided to set up his own business called the Centre for Resolution. Ryan joins me on the programme now to tell us about his business and to tell us about why he got involved with RNIB's latest campaign, How I See. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us on the programme today. Now, you lost your sight due to glaucoma, didn't you?
Yes, yeah, so I lost my sight. So it runs in my family. I have the condition called glaucoma, which is a bit like a silent thief. You don't know you've got glaucoma unless you start getting some of the symptoms, which is sometimes for some people it's headaches, eye aches. And really what that is, glaucoma is a condition whereby you don't have the natural valves in your eye to have this fluid drain out of your eye. So over a period of time, that fluid's building up, and then that starts pressing against your optic nerve and damages an optic nerve. Now, some people with age get glaucoma, or they may have it where they maybe use glasses as they get older. So those kind of hundreds of thousands of millions of pixels that make up a picture in your eye, they're gradually being taken away by the rising pressure in your eye, which is the glaucoma. So unfortunately for me, I experienced it when I was about 5 years of age, and by that time I'd lost a massive amount of, I think all of it. I think I had no perception of light in the left, and what had happened is I didn't even realise that the vision in my right eye was basically compensating for the lack of vision in the left. So by the time they got to me, there wasn't out what there is today in terms of preventatives and operations. So they just said at that moment in time, we can try and slow down how fast the disease is going to take your vision, but inevitably it's going to blind you.
It's a horrific time in your life when you're told that you have this eye condition that's only going to progress and get worse. And I know from, you know, losing my sight very suddenly myself and experiencing acute attacks of glaucoma from time to time, it can be very painful.
Extremely painful, yeah. I mean, my granddad, he started losing his vision when he was about 26, and he had his eyes removed in the end because it was just too painful for him. But there wasn't the support out there neither, but there wasn't the technology, so even from a social aspect, there wasn't what there is today. But yeah, from a pain point of view, it is terrible. And some people get flickering lights and colours and all types of things associated with it. And you get something called a chronic headache, which apparently is a worse version of a migraine. Now, some people don't go into work with a migraine because they're dreadful. So having something above that is excruciating.
I know exactly what you're talking about. In fact, it was only maybe 2 years ago now, coming up for 2 years ago, that I actually had to wear an eye patch over one eye because the pain was just so excruciating that, you know, even though I couldn't see out of it, any little bit of wind or a breeze or anything, that, you know, just blinking just about killed me. So it's a terrible, terrible thing. It really is. Now, tell us a bit about your business.
Yeah, so my business, Centre for Resolution, we do a variety of things, actually. So we're involved in dispute resolution by the way of mediation. So mediation is a process in which we get involved in disputes between parties, whether it's between two businesses or employees and management or family disputes, civil and commercial disputes. So there's that side of things. That's dispute resolution. We also have a range of mentoring and coaching services. And yeah, again, I mean, that's also in the workplace, but also private and personal coaching and mentoring as well, which is very much about empowerment, providing clarity to yourself, trying to see what your goals and objectives are in the future and trying to meet those. And then more recently, we've gone into the world more so because we get a lot of requests, because with having a vision impairment myself and being, you know, very much engaged in the community of disability, not just even vision impairment, disability, we're finding that people are coming to us more for issues surrounding that. So we're doing disability awareness training as well, because organisations just, a lot of them really want to do better in that area, and they don't know how to broach disability on a wider spectrum before you even get to vision impairment. So they're the main services: dispute resolution, coaching and mentoring, and then just the training aspect as well now.
So your business sounds like a real one-stop shop. The Centre for Resolution, how did it come about? Why did you decide to get into this kind of field?
I've done mentoring and coaching for a number of years, and I was qualified at quite a low level in terms of academic qualification, but I practiced it. And in the world of coaching and mentoring and even counselling and mediation, all of those support services are, they're not very well regulated. There are regulatory bodies that will kind of regulate you, but it's very much on the individual and the organisation to put themselves under those umbrellas. I wanted to skill up and do it to a better level, so I did. And what happened is I had a different business, and myself and the person who was running that other business, we parted ways. We had different visions of that particular business. And what I didn't like in the previous business was the fact that I used to lean a lot on his expertise. I wanted to be able to do something where I was relatively independent doing it. Everybody always said I was a good communicator and I was utilising these skills anyway. So I kind of felt, okay, mediation is something you get involved in, and you've always been involved in disputes and working alongside people to find solutions. And you do that very much in your coaching. So why not put all of this under one umbrella and push it as a business? And that's yet again how the disability awareness training came around as well, because organisations were often getting me in, and I started reading up on policy and effective ways to work with disabled people for many years, because I wanted to make things easier and better for myself. So naturally people would lean on me for consultancy or dispute resolution or coach. So I thought, you need to put all of this under one umbrella and really push it.
Very much so. And I think, you know, who better than somebody that's been through a life-changing experience like yourself and who is registered as a disabled person to give disabled awareness training? I do think that, that, you know, there's a lot of weight behind that.
I think so. I shared a view. I mean, there are some people out there who feel just having, say, you know, a vision impairment or just having a disability is enough. And it really isn't. I mean, I think you do get a different type of experience from having a workshop or having a training day delivered by someone with a disability. But on top of that, not only would I research and go to various seminars, or I go to other people's training and see what they're doing, I'm constantly skilling up and reading. And in my previous business, I worked with people with learning difficulties and those who had dementia as well. So I've always been exposed to a wide range of disabilities, not to mention in my upbringing, going in and out of mainstream education, specialist education. I've always been around people with disabilities, and I'm quite easy with that subject, and I'm not one that's easily offended with it. And I think some people are scared to broach disability. So in delivering that training, I think it actually does the reverse of what some people think. Rather than me kind of beating people over the head with, you've got to get it right for disabled people, actually, because I'm quite used to it, I have been in a position where my eyes were really good at one point, it's actually quite nice to be able to deliver it in such a way that you can put people at ease and realise that disability is not this kind of really scary subject. Actually, we can broach it, we can talk about it in an open platform, in a safe environment.
Without a doubt. And I think, you know, being registered completely blind myself now, I know that there's times that I feel I've got to almost kind of, I don't know, belittle my disability in a way to make other people feel comfortable with it. And sometimes I think, you know, why am I doing this? Why am I taking the mickey out of myself just to make somebody else feel more comfortable? But I think sometimes you've got to do what you've got to do to try and educate people, don't you? And it's not that we should all be kind of poking fun at ourselves, but sometimes you do have to, as a person with a visual impairment, make people feel at ease so that they can be at ease around other people with visual impairments or disabilities.
If we're not approachable about it, and schools are not teaching disability, which I think is a disgrace, because you've got every other type of, you know, education. You've got, you know, sex education, religious education, mathematics, science, but we don't have any disability awareness. So for me, if we're not comfortable and we're not willing to educate or share our insights on how we feel, how could we ever expect the mainstream society to be able to be comfortable and know what to do best with disability? So on one hand, we can't be telling people off in the mainstream, you've got to be like this, but then we're not willing to actually suggest how best to do things.
Very, very much so. No, I completely agree with you. And yes, it is difficult sometimes, you know, before I even throw the covers off myself in the morning, you know, I'm a blind person with diabetes. When I go through to my kitchen, I'm a blind person making breakfast. I come into work and I work with blind people and I talk about blind subjects. But you know what? As far as I'm concerned, I think that if I can share one piece of information that just relates to somebody in some small kind of way, then my journey with sight loss hasn't been in vain.
No, I'm with you on that. I think the way you look at it is a very healthy and positive perspective to live in. I mean, I think there's a statistic that says there's like 1 in 4 people that are disabled. You know, sometimes people have long-term health conditions. Some people are maybe depressed for a short or long period of time. Some disabilities are invisible. But anything that disables your positive thinking and prevents you from going forward or trying to achieve what you do, there's various degrees of it, but that's disabling. And we're not very good as a society at recognising disabilities and how to work alongside it. And I think that's something that's, as culture is changing, but here in the UK, exploring how feelings, I mean, when you go to like the eye hospitals or any hospital, they're very good on the medical model. We're going to fix you or we're going to give you this treatment. There isn't the social aspect and the social side that runs alongside that as to support services from anything as big as counselling, as in-depth as that, or support services from your peers who are going through the same thing, so you're not feeling on your own. So it is a tricky subject, and I sometimes feel the onus is on the disabled or the person with a disability to try and change that view and that perspective, because we're the ones dealing with it.
Now, you are, you know, very, very positive. You're one of the most positive guys that anybody could speak to, I have to say, Ryan. And, you know, you're also really, really in with the bricks with R&IB at the moment, because you're heavily involved with the How I See campaign. And you're part of this recent film. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I don't even really know how that came about. I mean, I've always been involved with R&IB and campaigning prior to being with R&IB. I've always wanted to try and get involved. When they did that kind of collaboration, I know they did one a while ago with the BBC, and leading on from that, now R&IB has got their campaign, How I See. I've just always wanted to get involved, and I felt if I can share, like you said before, a perspective on it that can change, I'm definitely up for doing that. I think the content now, whether it's going through, you know, radio, or whether it's going through, you know, sometimes it's pictures, we're trying to appeal not just to the community of vision impairment, we're trying to elevate this subject to the point that it's mainstream. And the way we're doing it in these short snippet videos, it's really resonating with people. It's kind of getting around now, and I think it's the way we're doing it. Social media is such a fast platform. People are using all types of smart devices now to be able to access the web. So what better time than to be able to put that out there in bite-sized chunks for people to be able to digest this information? I'm just glad I'm a part of it.
Well, I am too, because, you know, you really know how to get your point across. And obviously, you know, it's what you do for a living. But I do think it's important that they are in bite-sized chunks, like you say, because I think you can go overboard trying to batter home a message, kind of overdo it a bit. I think in small chunks, you can really get to people and get them thinking.
Yes, yes. I was approached by a college in Bristol that does, they have kind of university status, but they're mainly a college, and they wanted to do some disability awareness training. And in the end, we ended up doing like an hour here and over with one group and an hour there. And we broke it down into different chunks. It was going to be impossible to get the whole knowledge of disability awareness to what you can do for disabled people across in a day anyway. So let's break it down into elements as to what your organisation is trying to achieve in embracing disability and working forward in that domain. So like you said, I mean, everyone's got different thresholds, but if you're going to be attempting a day at anything, you need it in bite-sized chunks, regular breaks. I mean, like you said, I'm not the disability police, so I'm not there trying to, you know, position anyone and say, you've got to do this and got to do that. It's just a perspective and practice that I see is best.
So Ryan, how can people see the film that you're involved in?
Okay, so there's a couple of films. I have a YouTube channel, which is Centre for Resolution. You can go, if you type in Centre for Resolution, we come up first, and then go through there, you can get to the YouTube channel. Also, you can go on R&IB's platform. And if we're talking about the How You Can See collaboration with the BBC, they've also got their version. So they're the links there. Really, like I said, bite-sized chunks. I don't think they're that long. They're not more than 10 minutes long, these clips. So it's not like a massive marathon watch. But I think the sense of humour, I mean, everybody that was involved in that project had a good sense of humour. Like what you were saying before, we're not too bored. I think we're great at that here in the UK anyway, in terms of sense of humour. You can belittle yourself, but in a funny way, and get the point across with sarcasm and jokes. And sometimes it's like we're talking about, it's that light-hearted way of getting the information across, rather than that's a disgrace, you're wrong, you're out of order. Yeah, there's a place for that, but not in educating people, there isn't.
Well, do you know something, Ryan? You're really leaving your stamp on the world, I have to say. And the business sounds fantastic. You're a very, very successful young man. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you here on the radio station. It really is. If anybody wants to find out more about the Centre of Youth Resolution, what is the best way to do so?
Yeah, so you can go on the website, that's centreforresolution.com. You can ring the office, that's on 01905-21717. Or you can email me direct, which is ryan@centreforresolution.co.uk.
Ryan, the very best of luck for the future, and thank you so much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
No, likewise, enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks to Ryan Compton there, speaking to RNIB's Jill Barclay. This is a Weekly Connect special looking at the new film by RNIB called How I See. Now, RNIB's Joe Kenny spoke to Bernie Mullen from Northern Ireland about her life with visual impairment as part of last year's How I See video.
My name is Bernie Mullen and I have retinitis pigmentosa, which is known normally as RP. I live in Dungiven, which is in County Derry.
I suppose to start with, could you maybe describe a couple of things of what it's like to live with RP on a day-to-day basis?
Well, it can be very limiting in that, you know, everything's like an obstacle course. Even inside the house, you're tripping over things, and you're outside, then you're not seeing, you know, the curb onto the road. So it can be quite frustrating at times. And then in the dark, I would have no sight at all, so it can be quite difficult to get out. It can be a struggle at times.
In your own words, what's it like seeing with RP?
I would find as if there would be, it's like having a mist or a fog. Everything's fairly cloudy through the day, and then in the evening, night time, I would just have no vision at all. I was diagnosed when I was about 23, I think I was, but like it had been going on for quite a while before that, late teens, and it just got worse. So I was 23 when I was diagnosed with it.
And has it got worse as the years went on, or?
It has, but it seems to have, you know, it's not progressing really quickly, so it's not actually got a lot worse this past, you know, few years.
Tell me a couple of bits of technology or sort of things that you use to kind of help with not being able to see fully.
Magnifiers, so I would use the ones that you would get from the hospital, the small magnifiers that they would supply, and I would use magnification on my mobile phone, Synaptic, which magnifies all the different screens for me. The computer, I used to have Supernova and Zoom Text, but now it's built into the computer, so I would use magnification all the time in the computer.
Would you use a cane or anything when you're out and about?
I have a cane, but I rarely use it. I'm using it more now, but I don't use it all the time. I think it draws attention to me more, and it's just, I just don't really feel that comfortable. I have had my training, and Marianne was brilliant, but I just only use it, you know, occasionally.
So tell me a little bit about your family life then, and you know, what your family's attitude and how they get on with you not being able to see fully.
They would be my husband and my, I have two daughters and a son, and they would be very supportive. Sometimes to a fault, that they would be wanting to do everything for you. And I like my independence too much. I have five grandchildren, and the oldest is six, Rachel, and she's absolutely brilliant. She seems to have an insight in some way. Maybe it's because I look after her so much. She would be very intuitive and would always know, you know, she would come back, watch Granny such and such, watch there's a step here. She's very good. She's really, really good now. And I would have some really good friends as well who would be very helpful and very supportive. But they know I like my independence, so if I want help, I will say to them. Having said that, I think it's important that we do accept help and tell. Like, I would go into a shop and I would have my magnifier to see the prices and see the different brands. And, like, people, assistants would always come over, do you need help? And it used to be I would have said, no, thank you. But now it's, you know, much easier to say yes, thanks, and accept the help that's offered, because people in the shops I find locally, you know, Derry, Dungiven, even Belfast, I find them very, very helpful. And I think attitudes have changed. People are more willing to come forward and offer help now. You know, it used to be you would have went into a shop and I would have asked, whereas, say, navy trousers, and there's over there, you know, on point, well, sure, I didn't know where over there was. But yeah. Now people would take the time, you know, and take you over and show you, actually show you where it is. So I find things have definitely improved.
That's an interesting point. So you think the public are becoming more...
Yeah, definitely more aware, yeah.
More aware.
And even in the workplace as well, you know, years ago people wouldn't have really understood. But now with visual awareness training that RNIB would provide, I think things definitely have started to improve. There's still a long way to go, but I think we're getting there slowly.
And what does it mean to you to be taking part in the How I See campaign?
I think it's very important to raise awareness and to educate people. I think nobody can do it better than people with partial sight or people who are blind. You know, it's nobody better can do it, because people with the best will in the world, you know, that work for organisations may be able to educate people, but they can't do it as well as the clients with the partial sight or blindness can do it.
What would you say to anybody who's listened to this, who maybe at a different stage of the journey to yourself, and maybe recently lost sight? What would you say to them?
I would definitely encourage them to get help and get support and get it as early as they can, and by joining support groups, talking to people who have the same conditions, because nobody else really does understand as well as people who have the same condition. And, you know, people would say, I know how you feel, or I know how you are, but they don't really at the end of the day. So it's getting in touch. I remember when I was first diagnosed, Sensory Support put me in touch with a fellow who had the same eye condition as me. And it was only then that it started to click with me, and the, you know, everything fell into place, that I understood he was able to work, and he showed me his computer with the magnification. And, you know, it was the start of my journey, really, was, you know, meeting him. The sensory support workers did all they could, but they couldn't really have that same reality check that he had.
So like a positive role model?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
We do hear that a lot. Could you talk a little bit more about that? Like, what did he... How did that come around?
He was able to show, you know, whenever I met him, he was able to show me in practice how he used the computer, how he worked, different aids that he had came across, magnifiers and different equipment that he used. And it was only seeing him use the equipment, you know, that I could see that I would be able to do the same things myself, you know, and meeting other people as well that had the same eye conditions, because every eye condition, as you know yourself, is different. You know, what I need and what somebody else needs could be completely different. You know, there's no standard solution. So it's getting the right solution for yourself. And only by talking to people and seeing what's out there, you know, and experience, it's trial and error sometimes, trying the things and seeing what works best for you. I would say it was probably one of the lowest points of my life, the day that the consultant said, it was the fact that he just said, there's nothing we can do. You'll just have to, you know, you're going blind, you'll just have to get on with it, as if, bye-bye, you know, that's it. And there was no mention of any sort of follow-up, or I'll see you back in 6 months' time. It was just go away, and that was it. Now, with the low vision clinics and the support that's there, even the workers locally, Katrina and Connor, that work with the hospitals, RNIB themselves would be in the patient client councils. There's a lot of communication, and there's a lot more support. But that particular day when I was told, it was just, you know, felt just like the end of the journey.
And now, you know, you fast forward a number of years on.
I have managed really well.
Yeah. And now you see yourself as like a, you know, you volunteer with RNIB, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. And I would, you know, I'd like to meet people who have just, I've met somebody recently in Limavady who's just been diagnosed, and, you know, not keen on coming under RNIB, not keen, you know, the community connect. And it's getting your foot on the door. It's getting the confidence to get meeting people, talking to people. And it's the only way to actually deal with it.
Well, Bernie, it's been fantastic talking to you today.
Thank you.
That's Bernie Mullen there talking to RNIB's Joe Kenny. Now, the How I See films give everyone a chance to speak about their eye conditions and share their stories. And one of those voices on last year's film was Sam Little. RNIB's Chris Wallace spoke to her to find out why she got involved.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio. The How I See campaign from RNIB uses people with an actual visual impairment to describe and raise awareness for the general public as to how issues affect the blind and partially sighted community. I'm on location today in Glasgow with Sam Little, friend to RNIB Connect Radio and regular contributor. Sam, how did you come to be involved in the How I See campaign?
I've been talking with RNIB over the past year, and I was so impressed with how well the campaign did last year. And as somebody who has a slight loss condition that it's almost invisible, I guess, to the general public. When people look at me, they think I don't look blind. So it was really important to me that I contributed to the campaign, because I think it's crucial that the public understand that the spectrum of sight loss is so huge, and that there's not one rule for all when it comes to sight loss.
And what is your visual impairment, Sam?
My visual impairment is part of Usher syndrome. I have type 2, and it's a combination of hearing loss and sight loss. And the sight loss part is retinitis pigmentosa. So that's where you have pigment building up on the retina. The way that it affects my vision is I have no peripheral vision. I have some central vision, which is still really good, but it really affects my depth perception, spatial awareness. I find it really hard to see in dark places, particularly at night and in the evening. So I use a long red and white cane, but recently I got a guide dog, so that's how I've been getting out and about.
And people who now see you with a guide dog, do you get any strange questions from people who maybe didn't realise before that you actually had a sight condition?
Yeah, everybody wants to talk to you when you have a guide dog. I think people are really surprised, because I think people don't notice a cane in the same way as they notice a dog. And you can fold up a cane and put it in your bag. So if somebody saw me sitting on the train, they'd be none the wiser. Where when you've got a guide dog, it's like a big beacon screaming out, "This person's visually impaired." So I think in some ways it's been a really good thing, because it's made people realise, oh, well, I didn't realise she was visually impaired, but now that I see her with a guide dog, she is, even though I thought she didn't look blind. So I think it's been quite good in highlighting that you don't need to look blind in order to have some form of sight loss.
We are on location in Glasgow today. What are you doing for the How I See campaign?
Well, today we are filming in the lovely windy and sunny weather of Glasgow, and we are talking about public transport, what it's like for me getting out and about, the different types of technology I use, and we're filming some shots of me navigating Glasgow with my guide dog Ziggy. So hopefully everything that we capture today will play a part in highlighting what it's like for me personally with my sight loss.
Transport is obviously a huge issue for people who have sight loss, and it's of course one of the main themes of the How I See campaign. And there have been a lot of improvements over the years, but what are some of the difficulties still facing people with sight loss?
I think buses are one of the forms of transport that still has a long way to go. So for example, here in Scotland, you don't have a voice announcer telling you what stop you're coming onto next, whereas in London, you have talking buses. So that can be really difficult, because you've got to rely on the bus driver to let you know that you've come to the right stop, or you have to constantly be searching for landmarks or keys or signs that you can see to help you know when you have to get off at the right stop. So that's certainly one of the difficulties that I faced. However, my experience of using the bus and the train, like, the staff are brilliant, and you know, they really go out of their way to help you when they can. But I think that's where education and awareness plays a huge role, and we really have to make sure that all the transport services have the right knowledge and the right education in order to be able to help people who want to use their transport.
And awareness raising is, of course, what we're doing with the How I See campaign. How important do you think this campaign is in providing awareness of sight loss to the general public?
I think it's extremely important. I think it can only do good things in terms of letting people know that having sight loss is not black and white. Being registered blind doesn't mean you can't see anything, and that there's a huge spectrum in terms of what people can and can't see. So just hopefully by letting people know about different people with their different experiences of different sight loss will raise awareness and just make people a bit more knowledgeable when they encounter these people out and about.
Now, we know, Sam, that the public do generally want to offer help or to assist, but sometimes they simply don't know how they can. Have you had any funny experiences with people trying to give you assistance, maybe sometimes unwanted?
Oh, yes, I have many experiences. I could go on for days. I think the one that comes to mind was I was coming home on the tube when I lived in London, and I had my long cane and I was standing at the door waiting to get off, and this gentleman offered me some help, and I was like, no, it's fine, you know, I get off here every day. The next thing I know, he's towing me up the steps with my elbow right up to the ticket barriers, and once we got through, he's like, oh, you know, I'll help you up here. And I was like, no, it's fine. I ran in the opposite direction with my cane, because I definitely don't like it when people come up and touch me and take me by the elbow without permission. And I was on the wrong side of the station as well, which is never ideal. But at the end of the day, people are just trying to help. So I guess that's when it's up to us, the people with the sight loss, to be vocal and explain to people, well, thank you very much. It's really nice of you to offer to help. Actually, I don't need any. I travel every single day. And then that's when you hope that the public can only take that in a good way and understand that, you know, whilst you are thankful, you're also an independent person. But then you can flip that on itself, because I know there's times when I've been standing at a crossing. It's really dark. You know, maybe the light's broken, I'm not aware. I feel like I've been standing there for hours. And somebody comes up to me and says, are you okay? Do you need a hand crossing the road? And I'll be like, well, do you know what? Yes, please. That would be really nice. Where normally I wouldn't need that help. So best thing you can do is ask and offer and then take whatever the person says in good grace.
What I love is the fact that the How I See campaign only uses people who actually have a visual impairment themselves to explain to people, you know, this is things that are working for me, this is things that don't work for me, this is how I see.
Yeah, I think the best way to get the information is from people who experience it in their day-to-day life. Whilst it's really useful to have statistics out there and data, the best way to learn is from people who have sight loss and experience sight loss on a day-to-day basis and tell people how they see.
And if someone did want to help someone with sight loss, what are the important things they should remember?
I think the important thing to remember is to be open-minded. That person's sight loss and how it works may not be obvious. I think another thing is to always ask people, do you need any help or how can I help you? Instead of assuming that you know how or you think you may know how they need help. That's why the How I See campaign is really important, because it highlights that there are so many different ways to experience sight loss. And I think also don't be offended if we turn around and say no, because independence is really important to somebody who is experiencing sight loss. And don't let it put you off asking somebody else, because that next person might just need your help.
Absolutely. Now, you have recently started working with Ziggy. He's your first guide dog. How are things different now with Ziggy rather than when you were using your cane?
I think what's different for me is that I've had to completely rethink how I travel. It's maybe been highlighted that when I was using a cane, I wasn't getting out and about in the most safest way possible. It's really made me slow down a lot. I was always dashing about a million miles an hour, and I think I was in some ways in denial as to how bad my eyesight was. And I was just lucky that I never had any bad accident. I think also it's getting used to people seeing me with a guide dog, because when I had a cane, it was easy to put away, and I don't think people saw me as Sam, the girl who's visually impaired. It was just Sam sometimes uses the cane to get out and about. And also, it's getting used to people. I have a lot of people coming up and talking to me and asking about Ziggy, asking if they can touch him. And while I'm all for raising awareness and telling people about how guide dogs work, sometimes I just want to get out and about and get on with what I'm doing. So that's been really difficult to deal with. And then also just, it's not just me anymore, it's me and Ziggy, so I've got to think about his welfare, I've got to think about all his different things that I need to take with me, I've got to make sure I've thought about our journey, what's Ziggy going to need, what am I going to need. So it's taken my planning and organisational skills to a whole new level that I didn't think was possible. But you know what, he's absolutely lovely, and especially when you're having a really bad day, because that's something that people forget about, is mental health and how that affects people with sight loss. So I'm having a really rubbish day. It's just nice to know I've got a cuddly friend, and I can stroke his ears, which are like velvet, and it just makes things a little bit better. So yeah, so it's a whole new experience. I've only had him for 3 months. It's definitely one of those things that's going to take time, and as a person who's very impatient, it's definitely a new challenge for me, but one that I'm all for taking on.
You get some really lovely moments. We were filming just outside Kelvin Grove Museum here in Glasgow just a few moments ago, and it's great to see that awareness raising is working. An American tourist stopped by. He was looking like he desperately wanted to play with Ziggy, but he did recognise that he had his harness on and was working.
Yes, I mean, people, despite the fact that he wears a harness and there's clear signage asking people not to distract the dog, people will still come up. What's really important with that is that you have to use the opportunity to say, no, I'm afraid not, he is a working guide dog. You know, I often joke that people can admire from afar because you don't want to completely belittle the fact that they're trying to interact with you and they just want to know a bit more about a guide dog. So yeah, I think it is getting there, and I think that's why it's so important if you have got sight loss that you do get out and about and that you don't let it stop you from experiencing different things in life, because the more the general public see people with different types of sight loss using different assistance mechanisms, whether it's a guide dog or a fancy phone or a cane, that's how they'll know, you know.
Sam, when people see Ziggy walking about the streets, they might be a bit surprised that he has decoration that other guide dogs might not. He's got an interesting red and white checked pattern across the front of his neck. What does that indicate?
So the flash that's got the red and white checks on it, what it indicates is that I'm also hearing impaired. So the equivalent with the cane that I used to use is that it had red stripes on the white. So this is then replicated on his flash. Again, that comes down to awareness. Not many people know that that's what that means, but it's just a good way to highlight he's not a hearing dog, but the person using this does have some form of hearing impairment.
Now, before I let you go and get back to filming the How I See campaign, Sam, another important part of the campaign is technology. How has technology improved things with your sight loss over the last few years?
I think for me what's been a huge help is the advancement in mobile phone technology. When I was first diagnosed, I think it was you could take a really bad grainy photo, play Snake and make phone calls and send text messages.
We all remember those days.
Maybe showing how old I am there. However, these days, you know, you've got the whole world at your fingertips. You have voice assistive technology and you've got Zoom capabilities. You can completely change the colour format and the font of the writing on your phone. And that can make such a huge difference to somebody. I know I use it a lot for taking pictures of things and then zooming in so I can get a clear idea of what it is I'm looking at. You know, I can map out my travel journey and find out times of things instead of trying to read them on a board. And also, especially now that I've got a guide dog, I'm not fumbling about looking for my phone, dropping it a million times. You know, I've got a smartwatch that I can use, and then just with a quick click of the button, I can hear or read the message and just send a message as well. So yeah, I love technology. I really don't know what I would do without it.
I think we're all in that situation.
Yeah.
Now, Sam, if people want to find out more about the How I See campaign, what's the best way for them to interact?
The best way to find out more about the How I See campaign is by searching hashtag How I See on Twitter, or you can head on over to the website www.rnib.org.uk.
Sam Little, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio today.
Thank you, Chris. Lovely to speak to you again.
And you. You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio.
That was Sam Little talking there to Chris Wallace. Now, this year's How I See film was entirely produced by blind and partially sighted people using their smartphones. Last year, the film was produced by RNIB in-house, and Chris Wallace spoke to Fiona Melville, who created it, to find out what was involved.
The idea came from the community, and that's what's so important about this series of films. We feel like we are addressing issues that the community wanted to get out into the public domain about how they see, how they feel, get a sense of the sight loss spectrum. So, in other words, not everybody who is registered blind is completely blind, and how they experience different situations like travel.
Now, as I mentioned before, it's rather exciting today because we're on location in Glasgow shooting the campaign film. Fiona, can you tell our listeners a little about what they can expect from this year's video?
Well, this year's video is going to carry on with the same sort of format as the other films, in that we are interviewing blind and partially sighted people about how they see. But this particular film is going to incorporate some filters that simulate eye conditions so that we are letting people get a sense of the sight loss spectrum who are sighted. So, in other words, not everybody who is registered blind is completely blind.
And how important is it for you to have the voices of blind or partially sighted people sharing their experiences on these videos?
It's completely important, and I think it's why these films have done so well. I think without those, I don't know what the films would be. They would be I suppose, kind of like NHS videos. And that's not what we're trying to do here. These are information-led films. I think that's why they're so popular, because, you know, blind and partially sighted people feel that their voices are getting out there, but also the public are finding out things in a really kind of a nice way, finding out information that they didn't know, and that's the response we're getting. I didn't know that, you know, so which is great.
What would you say are the key messages of the How I See campaign?
The key messages are, this is my experience as a blind or partially sighted person. This is how I see. It may not be how you think I see. We don't all see the same way. And these are some of the problems we encounter in everyday life. And these are sort of some of the things that we think would help us. So those are the messages, really, I think. And then there are some themes with this particular campaign about employment, isolation, and getting around, which we think are issues that affect blind and partially sighted people, lots of blind and partially sighted people. And so these are the themes that will be inherent in this film.
Now, Fiona, how successful do you think it has been for RNIB in raising awareness?
From my point of view, I came in as a freelancer and we made these lovely videos, and I don't think many people saw them. People watch eye health films because they are often a second or first point of call for people with a diagnosis. So they're always very well watched. But in terms of the films that we were making, we'd put a lot of work into them and feel like we'd done these great things and nobody would see them for various reasons. Now we are utilising social media, and it's, you know, it's a huge opportunity to spread information to really thousands and thousands of people. And this series has really done that for RNIB. I think it's really started the ball rolling. It's brand awareness, it's information about blind and partially sighted people, it's a presence on social media, it's you know, taking advantage of the free advertising, really, that social media is or provides. So it's been hugely successful. So we feel like, you know, people are what we are, thousands of people are watching these films, as opposed to in the past, hundreds.
And as you mentioned, Fiona, you've been working with RNIB and the How I See campaign. What are the issues that we come up against time and time again? And what are the surprising things for you this year about what the participants are telling you?
The surprising things, for me, in general, I mean, I didn't know about the sight loss spectrum when I started. My background is in documentary, so I'm always, you know, enjoy going into other people's worlds. I think that's why I took it up in the first place. And so, I always end up learning a lot. And from making these films, I've learned a lot about sight loss spectrum. Also about, you know, how people are treated out in the world. And I think the main thing that we've heard over and over again is how people are just grabbed in the street and pushed across the road or taken in a direction they never wanted to go in without being asked. And today, what I've learned is how people will approach guide dogs and pet them without asking their owners if it's okay. And I have seen this happen about five times today while we're filming on the bus. And people are lovely, but they seem to see the dog and not the owner. And, you know, they seem to not see the dog's working harness. And you'd think that that would be, you know, I don't know, maybe they think they're being indirectly nice to the owner through petting, but it doesn't really feel like they're looking at the person who is, you know, or acknowledging that the dog is, or understanding that the dog is working.
That's one of the important things of raising awareness, isn't it? Because as we know, so many people in the general public, they do want to help, they want to offer assistance when they can, but they are not fully aware of the do's and don'ts of being in that situation. From what you've learned speaking to blind and partially sighted people over the last few years, if someone does see someone with a visual impairment, maybe travelling, and they want to offer assistance, what are the things they should keep in mind?
I just think that everybody wants to be asked. And I think maybe people are nervous about asking in case the person doesn't want help, or they just don't know anybody who's blind or partially sighted and they don't know how to communicate, or they don't want to be intrusive, or they don't care. There could be a whole bunch of different reasons, but I think these films will really help inform the public about really that it's okay to ask, and that they should ask if they're not sure, and that people do or don't want help, but it hopefully will break down a barrier.
Absolutely. And Fiona, if our listeners would like to find out more information about the How I See campaign, where can they go?
they can go to our website and they can also look online, because if they do hashtag how I see, they're going to find the films and they're going to find all the comments underneath on social media. It's probably the best place to go, see what's being talked about on Twitter, and join in the discussion.
And you can join in the discussion too by visiting the website, www.rnib.org.uk, or you can tweet us at RNIB Radio, and don't forget to use the hashtag HowIsee. Fiona Melville, one of the creators of RNIB's HowIsee campaign, thank you so much for joining me on RNIB Connect Radio today.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure. I've never done this before. Thank you.
That was Fiona Melville speaking to Chris Wallace there, and that brings us to the end of our special episode on the new movie from RNIB called How I See. If you would like to watch the film, visit rnib.org.uk/How I See, or follow RNIB on Twitter or Facebook. And if you would like to share the video with your friends or family, use the hashtag How I See to join the conversation and talk about your life with a visual impairment. And feel free to share your story with us as well at RNIB. We really do love to hear from you. Our email address here is radio@rnib.org.uk. I'm Stephen Scott. This has been a Weekly Connect special. Thank you so much for listening. And join us next week at 1 p.m. because when it's 1 o'clock, it's the Weekly Connect. Thanks for listening.